Lot of emails.
Monica, how many do we have on the call now?
We are up to 45 or 46.
Okay, I know that number. Thank you. That number will continue to rise here quickly. It's 11 a.m. Good morning. We'll get started with today's call. I'm Bruce Whitehurst with the VBA. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the call today, and we will have time for questions a little later. Let me ask VBA Chairman Jeff Haley to pick up our call with a few remarks. Jeff?
Hey, thanks, Bruce, and good morning, everyone. I do want to thank Bruce and his team for taking the initiative to set this very important call up for us today. The purpose of today's call is to share some insight on the issue that's facing, you know, everyone in this country. It's just the results of the coronavirus pandemic crisis. We'll also discuss results of the survey, and we're going to provide some time for some peer discussion on how we can best balance the needs of our staff and our customers during this very, very unique time. From a logistical point, we appreciate all those who are currently on the line for today's call. We are recording it, so those who are not able to participate live might be able to listen to it. So feel free to share the link with any of your coworkers that you deem appropriate. And at the end of the call, there's going to be time for us to ask some questions. So to avoid background noise, I'd ask everyone, you're currently on mute, except for those that are going to speak initially. If you'd like to ask a question, you can press *9. That is *9 at any time during the discussion, and you'll be put in the queue. When it's your time to ask a question, you'll be prompted and your line will be open. You can ask your question. Also, feel free at any time, email Bruce directly, Bruce at vabanker.org. I think that's right, Bruce. If you'd prefer.
With an S, yes, vabankers.org.
Okay. Yeah, let's get on with it. So, Bruce, do you mind making some comments about the survey results that you've gotten this week?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and these will be very brief. Thanks to the 37 banks who've completed our survey this week, and the first question is the one that is getting the most attention this week, and that's around branch closings. And so, as you can see, over 90% are closing, have closed, or are actively discussing closing lobbies other than by appointment and keeping drive-throughs open. There's some variations there, but that's clearly the trend. On a call with the ABA this week, an expert there in consultation with federal regulators says this is emerging quickly as a best practice. And I am aware that Atlantic Union Bank will be closing all its lobbies other than by appointment starting tomorrow. I'm aware of several other banks that have done or will be doing the same imminently. So it certainly does appear to be a quickly emerging best practice. Now, Joe Face and or Jake Lutz will address other topics that are covered in our survey. So I'm going to kick it back to Jeff Haley to take us to our next segment. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. You know, Joe, look, I'm an OCC bank, but I cannot imagine what's going on in all the regulators' offices and heads right now. I know we're all a big fan of you and your office. I would just appreciate any thoughts, support, guidance that you have, you know, from your perspective.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Jeff, for those kind comments, and thank you, Bruce and VBA, for allowing me to be on the call today. I do have at the table with me my three deputy commissioners. I asked them to sit in. I hope you don't mind. At Bob Hughes, who most of you probably know, he's in charge of our bank and credit union supervision. I have Susan Hancock here, Deputy Commissioner in charge of non-depository, and I have Dustin Fiziot, who's our Deputy Commissioner in charge of licensing and administration. He handles all of our applications. Bob's been here 40 years. I've been here 40 years. Susan's been here 32 years. Dustin's the youngest with 15 years. He might be the smartest of the four. But we've got well over 100 years of experience. I don't say that to impress you. I say that to emphasize that even with all that experience, we've never seen anything like this and never dealt with anything like this. I thought after 2008 and the crisis that we were probably able to deal with just about anything that came up in the future after dealing with that, and I was wrong. But here we are, and Jeff, as you mentioned, the regulators have been pretty busy the last couple of days. We're having numerous conference calls with the FDIC, the Fed, our other state regulators. We're comparing notes. We're talking about what each is doing, trying to pick and choose what might work in our state, you know, versus another state. So it's a very, very collaborative effort among both federal and state bank regulators at this point. And it's been very helpful for us. We have received numerous calls from bankers and other financial institutions, questions about closing branches, closing lobbies, that type of thing. Although our state statute does not require you to notify us, we would like for some notification if and when you could get it to us. I'll tell you right now that I think we're in a situation where we and you might have to make quick decisions. And I don't want you thinking about what I, as a regulator, is going to say if you don't notify me first. I want you to do what's best for you and your bank and your employees and your community, and then you can notify me later if that's you know, more helpful in a quick situation. If you do decide to close your lobby, it might be prudent to set up a process where you can make an appointment for someone that has a safe deposit box to get to that box without jeopardizing, you know, your employees or whatever, particularly if they have been hoarding money in the safe deposit box for a situation like this, and they want to get to that money as quickly as they can. As of this past Monday, all of our examiners, both depository and non-depository, are off the road. They're all working remotely, and we're going to continue to work remotely for the foreseeable future. But that's pretty much the case for the FDIC, the Fed, and most other states across the country. For those banks that are soon to be examined, we will contact you and discuss the logistics for the examination, with hopefully all of it being done off-site. Our federal counterparts, the Fed and the FDIC, have informed us that customer demands for cash are higher than normal. That's probably something I don't need to tell you. But please keep track of your cash requirements. And I would probably caution against limiting cash withdrawal requirements at this point, if at all possible. Something like that could possibly lead to a run of some type. All it really takes, I think, at this point is for one disgruntled consumer to have a microphone stuck in his face and start saying bad things about, not being able to get this or that, and who knows where it will go from there. Again, we're working very closely with our federal counterparts. We're discussing, you know, the troubled debt restructuring, what we may need to do, what guidance we may need to send out. We're discussing a number of other things. We're trying to figure out every possible type of scenario that may occur. We want to be very flexible with you at this period. We want to allow you to make decisions, again, without worrying about notifying us first. We're not going to second guess you. We have confidence that you're going to make the best decision for your institution, your customers, your employees, and your community. It's a situation where things are changing minute, hourly, daily, and we're all trying to adjust. So we're going to try to continue to communicate with you. Don't hesitate to call us. And I will go ahead and give you my cell phone number right now if you do not have it, and you can call me anytime if you need to. My number is 804-840-7137. And I will stop there and await questions after Mr. Lutz. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Joe. And I do look forward to some the question and answer time. You know, Jake, I don't know why we always just feel we need to have an attorney nearby. A lot of us, and maybe you'll address it, but a lot of us have annual meetings coming up. You know, I'm sure you will make a comment or two about virtual shareholder meetings. Can I turn it over to you for some comments?
Jeff, that's great. And can everybody hear me?
We got you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. I want to thank you and Bruce for the invitation to participate. Like everyone, I regret the circumstances that have caused us to have to come together for this call. I also want to mention that Demarion Johnston, DBA General Counsel, is on the phone. So if I get any really hard questions, she's volunteered to answer those. I wanted to break this down into about 10 separate topics. The first one is overall preparedness. We're in uncharted waters, as Joe just said, and as you all know. There are many, many legal issues. I don't have all the answers to those, but we can find the answers. I'd like to refer you to the Troutman website, which has a very good resource center for the COVID-19. It has a lot of information, including a toolkit, news and insights, and links to a number of other resources. And the toolkit includes business continuity messaging, notice of office closing, announcement of regarding exposed employees, how to handle an employee that's tested positive, and so forth. There are also a number of employment questions addressed in the FAQs, as well as workplace management FAQs, guidance regarding employee safety, pay issues, and some advice regarding discrimination and harassment claims in this context. There are also messaging templates and preparedness templates there, so I'd refer you to Troutman.com for that. Jeff, on the issue of shareholder meetings, many companies have determined to go to a virtual meeting. There's also something known as a hybrid meeting. Just to be sure we all understand the difference, a virtual meeting is where shareholders can participate only by video conference or audio conference. It's only in a few instances that companies will use a video conferencing capability. 99% of these virtual meetings are held only by teleconference. So a hybrid meeting is one that involves making premises available for those shareholders who want to attend a meeting in person, but also having participation by teleconference. There aren't many companies that have done or are considering hybrid meetings because of the exposure risk here. So really, most of my comments are devoted to the topic of virtual meetings. If you've already given a notice of your meeting and you have not adopted a virtual meeting format, the SEC and the other regulators have given a lot of guidance and some leniency here by suggesting that you just give a supplemental notice of the ways that you would normally communicate with your shareholders to be sure that they are aware of your change of plans. There are 43 states which allow virtual shareholder meetings, but there are 8 states which do not allow them. And Virginia is one that does allow, so we don't have to worry about that in Virginia. But it's important for your company, if it chooses to go with a virtual meeting, to review its articles and bylaws to ensure that there's nothing in your articles or bylaws that would prohibit a virtual meeting. And that's, and Virginia law requires you to do that. We also recommend that if you do a virtual meeting, that you publish guidelines to be followed at the meeting itself to lend order to the presentation of the meeting agenda, an opportunity for shareholders to ask questions, and so forth. There's a question about whether you should allow for meaningful shareholder participation in the meetings. And the best practice is to use a technology like we're using today, where those participating are muted, but if they have a question, then they can press a button and go in the queue to present their question. Another technique that may work, rather than accepting those questions live during the meeting, would be to receive them by email. So you can advise your shareholders if they have a question to present by email, they can do that. There could be some criticism that management would be filtering the questions that they address if it's an email submission. And similarly, if somebody wants to drop off a question in a box at the at a designated location up until the meeting time or shortly thereafter, someone could retrieve those and take them into the meeting itself. When I say take it into the meeting itself, I mean into the room where the CEO or the person running the meeting would be located. It's also important under Virginia law that your board authorize that the meeting be held as a virtual meeting. And so if your board hasn't approved this, you would want to go back and get a unanimous consent or have board action taken to comply with the Virginia statutes. And I'll say there's some SEC guidance in this also that is pretty readily available. The next issue I wanted to address is branch operations. I think Joe did a great job talking about that, and Bruce mentioned that also. We've seen a variety of different things, including the fact that the Capital One Cafe branches have all been closed, I guess, for obvious reasons. Our advice is if you're going to somehow restrict the use of a branch facility or close it for some purpose, that if possible, post a notice on your website so that your customers become aware of that. And if there's some other notice system that works well for you in terms of contacting customers, that you consider using that as well. We do advise that you notify your regulators when possible, both federal and state, of any changes that you might be making. We just think that's good practice and good for regulatory relations. And I think Joe's comments were very generous in that regard. We think the key issue here is balancing health and safety of employees and customers while providing sufficient banking channels online, through ATM, through drive-through, et cetera, to promote customer access to their funds. So that kind of segues into the next topic I wanted to address, which is responding to customer needs. We've seen situations where banks have waived penalties for early CD withdrawal, subject to a certain dollar limit, to allow customers who have immediate cash needs to address those without penalty. We've seen options for payment deferrals and mortgages, HELOCs, personal loans, small business loans, and so forth. We've seen some banks offering expedited SBA lending application processes. And we've seen some banks, for example, adjust the transaction limits for their ATMs to facilitate greater deposit amounts in cash, for example, from businesses that make cash deposits or withdrawals for those customers that feel they need additional cash under these circumstances. The federal agencies released on March 9th guidance that encourages financial institutions to work constructively with borrowers and other customers in affected communities, and they've stated that prudent efforts that are consistent with safe and sound lending practices should not be the subject of examiner criticism, and that's FDIC Press Release 25-2020. Another issue that we've run into recently involves material contracts and the force majeure provisions. Those are written in different ways, but this is a provision in your contract that would allow you to possibly terminate the contract in the event of a national emergency or some other disaster, and many people feel that we are in those waters right now. These clauses are written different in different ways in different contracts. So you need to be careful for purposes of interpreting these provisions and then invoking them. And we can provide to you a checklist of considerations involving invoking these force majeure provisions that includes reviewing critical contracts to assess what your rights are, identifying what law applies because it may not be Virginia law, reviewing the notice requirements under your agreement and complying with them strictly, assembling and retaining documentation on the basis for your force majeure claim should you have to prove it, and so forth. And so it would be our advice to review all of your material contracts to consider how this force majeure provision could come into play because things are changing so rapidly. The next topic I wanted to briefly address involves examination policies. Joe's talked about that quite a bit. The FDIC guidance dated just Monday of this week speaks to limiting site time in examinations, all FDIC employees working remotely, and other steps that have been made. So, and Joe's addressed that very significantly and generously, I think, from the Virginia standpoint, so I won't spend much more time on that. Workforce management is a very important issue. There are a number of employment law-related issues. In the interest of time, I won't go into those. If specific questions come up, I'll try to answer them. I'm not an employment lawyer, but I will say the resource guide at troutman.com gets into a lot of details and how to handle employee and employment issues. The next topic I wanted to address briefly is impacts in M&A. The market, in our view, has been trending away over the last 6 months involving M&A transactions. Obviously, the current environment is chilling interest in new deals. Existing deals are being impacted in different ways. They must be examined in the material adverse change or force majeure clauses in the merger agreements need to be carefully examined. Some banks have extended the timeline by mutual agreement of the merger parties, but we've seen also heightened regulatory review because of the additional stress on the balance sheet of both institutions and the pro forma balance sheets of the resulting institution. Management of capital is another issue that we're seeing a lot of questions involving. Many banks are seeing their stock trading at just above or even below tangible book value. So that creates the question of what should you be doing, if anything, to support your stock price. Interestingly, the six largest banks in the country stopped their stock buyback or repurchase programs just within the last week to conserve capital and meet customer need. Other banks are increasing their buyback programs to take advantage of these historically low prices. Some banks are in the process of considering the sale of sub-debt or preferred stock, and you know, this any stock sale could be highly dilutive, and the risk premiums and sub-debt can be significant. And I'm sure all of you are using financial advisors to advise you in connection with that. But these are very interesting and uncharted waters that we're in. Finally, I wanted to speak a little bit to the role of your board of directors, because your board may be asking you what, if anything, they should be doing that would be different from what they normally do. And among those key issues that boards are facing is the need to maintain close contact with senior management to help support senior management, but not to take on the role of senior management. So there's a clear distinction between what your board members need to do and what senior management needs to do to lead the organization forward. There should be a periodic review of the viability of the enterprise from both a short-term and long-term perspective. I think your board may need to have more frequent briefings than your monthly meetings. CEO updates, for example, that would apprise them of what they would need to know on a relatively frequent and short-term basis. I could give some other comments on guidelines for directors and your relationship with your directors, but in the interest of time, I'll stop there. And I guess, Jeff, I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah. Jake, thanks. To be honest with you, hadn't not given much thought to the board briefings. That's an excellent suggestion. So, hey, Bruce, do you mind, look, I'm going to turn it over to you. If you've got any comments just about the industry, you know, coordination, ABA, whatever it might be, and then will you just go ahead and take us through the Q&A time?
Yes, I sure will, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And let me just mention that we have almost 90 people on the call now. We appreciate this strong participation for our ability to coordinate and support each of you. We did send a press release out day before yesterday throughout Virginia about banks still open, strong, ready to help, et cetera. And there's also been an article today, just today in the Roanoke Times, featuring our chairman, Jeff Haley, and also from American National, also some folks from Bank of Botetourt, talking about the fact that banks are here to serve and support. All of Jake's comments were so helpful, as well as Commissioner Face's, and just a reminder that we're recording this call and we'll send a link to the recorded call out so that you can share it with others as well. We sent you an email just before this call with a link to our new VBA resources page on the coronavirus challenge. And this includes updates on our education and training events. In short, we've moved all of our spring events into the fall. All but one, and one will either be postponed or go virtual. We have information on employee benefits and various resources there for you. We have a link to the ABA's resource page, which is also rich with information. We are adding or have added a link to the Troutman page that Jake talked about. I also know that Steve Yackel is on this call and know that VACB and ICBA also have a lot of resources to support our banks. I want you to know we've been in touch with the governor's office this week about Small Business Financing Authority efforts that you'll be hearing about soon that should be helpful in some of their loan guarantee programs to support an extension or deferment of payments on loans. And also they are actively pursuing getting connected with the SBA Disaster Loan Program. There's information on where that stands on our VBA resource page as well. We have a daily conference call every afternoon with the American Bankers Association and all 50 state associations. And we're staying on top of all kinds of industry challenges and issues right now, but also the stimulus bill pending in Congress, and especially the elements that will help banks best serve your customers. A lot of those have to do with SBA funding, increasing SBA guarantee levels, et cetera. So we're watching that very closely. We'll continue to send out more information. We'll likely have more conference calls on various topics and want to be a key resource for you during this unprecedented time. I want you to know that the VBA staff is working virtually from home and 100% functional. And so reach out to us just as you would in any other normal, more normal circumstance, and let us know how we can best support you. We'll now open it up for questions you may have, and remember to press *9 on your phone to be added to the queue to ask a question. Or you can email questions to me at bruce@vabankers.org. Monica, do we have questions in the queue at this time?
Yes, I see one so far. So you're going to hear a prompt from the system when it's your time to ask your question.
Okay, here we go.
Hi, this is Lloyd Harrison with Virginia Partners Bank. Question for Commissioner Face. As we're working with borrowers and considering making modifications to loans, including those secured by real estate. Is that going to trigger the requirement to order additional flood certs? And what will the effect be on TDRs if we do some sort of modification beyond 90 days?
This is Bob Hughes. I was told yesterday that the federal interagencies are working on guidance with TDRs, and that should be coming out in the next week is what they said, probably issued by the FFIEC. So I really can't answer the question today. They did say that every loan is going to be a case-by-case thing until this guidance maybe clarifies this issue for us. As far as the Virginia examiners, we're going to tell them to not be overly harsh or critical in the way that they look at these situations. We all realize that there's going to be borrowers that have financial difficulties. I would imagine most of your major borrowers are going to have some sort of financial difficulties. So we're going to be even keel on the way that we look at it, but hopefully this guidance will enlighten us all.
Thank you, Bob. And everyone that has a question, please tell us your name and bank before you ask. Do we have someone else in the queue?
Hey, Bruce, this is Rex Smith from Essex Bank. This may be for Jake or your legal counsel. We're experiencing, because we're in Maryland, we have courthouses closed throughout Maryland. We understand today that Stafford and Spotsylvania have closed their courthouses. As we do modifications or try to, God help us, get a new loan in, as we run into this issue of not being able to do title searches or record or look even for UCC filings, is there any guidance, other than not lending or not perfecting your collateral, is there any legal guidance as to how we can try to at least get in the line of perfecting our collateral or any notifications that can be done to try to ensure that someone wouldn't jump in front of you with a lien in those situations?
Let me ask Demarion to hit *9 and weigh in because we've been tracking this issue, Rex, for sure.
Hi, this is Demarion. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, Demarion.
Okay, great. So that's a great question. Matt and I, Matt Bruning and I, participated on a conference call yesterday with a representative from the clerks of the courts. So all the clerks of courts are independently elected constitutional officers. So there is no sort of central authority that controls all the clerks, like, for example, the governor. However, they are all supposed to have continuity plans, just like banks do, and they are required to proceed with required functions. So we have been assured by a representative from the clerks that they are all instituting their continuity plans. They want to ask people to record electronically if you have that capability. They're supposed to put drop boxes outside of their offices so that if you want to drop physically off your matters that need to be recorded, you can do so. So if you all hear that clerks are not open for essential functions, please let us know because we can reach out to their representatives to be sure that they get online.
This is Joe Face. Our Bureau of Insurance has been getting similar calls, and I believe they've actually put out a statement of some kind. Is that correct?
I don't think it's on the
preparing some kind of statement.
To individual companies.
Yeah, it's individual. We're getting lots of ad hoc inquiries related to settlement agents.
Lenders and settlement agents.
And mortgage lenders. And right now, I think that what Demarion said is consistent with what they're doing. But obviously, we're recommending that where counsel is available, check with them is the appropriate route to proceed when it relates to real estate closings.
Oh, because it's a web. Virginia is, of course, a web settlement state. So, as you know, the loan is not supposed to be dispersed till it's the deed of trust is recorded, and that's been one of the questions we've been getting from lenders and settlement agents, concern about the court closing. So, and I, as I understood, as Demarion mentioned, they are supposed to be open for essential functions, but I think when people are seeing that the courts are closed, they've been panicking.
Hey, Bruce, to that point, can we assume that, you know, Virginia Title, our title companies are fully engaged on this topic and are prepared if they're helping us with loan closure?
They are absolutely fully engaged, all the bank-owned title agencies. Right. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
We have another question. I do have a question from Mike Dameron at TD Bank that he emailed to me about, do we know how SBA assistance plays out, once the second stimulus package is finalized? And the short answer, Mike, on that is we don't right now. It remains a moving target, but we early indications on the disaster loan program are that SBA is actually doing more to be streamlined and efficient than we have ever seen. And we hope that that is a trend that continues, and that as they are able to hopefully increase both funding and the guarantee percentages on 7A program and anything else that we can get through Congress, that will help. And so there's more information coming as soon as possible on that.
Bruce?
Is there another question? Yes.
Bruce, this is Gary Mills, First Community Bank. I would ask you to address the move to drive-through only service, picked up on part of your comment in that regard, and what the trend is in our state. Understood you say it's a recommended best practice, but what is your sense for what we're doing in Virginia? And then what best practice as far as notification would be? Is there a recommended lead time to inform customers of that change?
Yes, Gary, a great question. I think from our survey, as I mentioned earlier, over 90% are actively considering doing this or have done so. I think close to half the banks in Virginia that responded, we had 37 responses, close to half have done so or will be doing so. And Commissioner Face and Jake both mentioned doing whatever you can to put this on your website, put it out on your social media, have as much communication with customers, and of course ensure the ability for folks that need to get into their safe deposit boxes or come in for other reasons to do so by appointment. I'll be happy to see if Commissioner Face or his deputies or Jake might like to add to my answer.
Well, all I would say, Bruce, at this point is, you know, we're trying to be very careful with what we might say in writing as opposed to what we say verbally to you and our banking industry, because we all know it's kind of crazy out there right now. And Dustin was relaying to me a little story this morning. I was not on the conference call, but my counterpart in Texas, Charles Cooper, put out some guidance, I guess it was, on banks closing their lobbies. And lo and behold, it appears in the newspaper, bank commissioner closing banks. So we try to be very careful and deliberate with what we're doing so that we don't get press headlines like that.
Gary,
I think that's very
helps.
Important, Joe. So go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, Gary, I don't know if it helps. We're going lobby only Friday. We're going to keep full staff on board until we digest what it means by going closing the lobbies, and we are communicating to our customers this afternoon.
This is Jake. The only thing I'd add to that is the importance of clarity of the communication about what you're doing and what you're not doing, and yep. The importance of posting clear messaging on the doors or other access points to the branch facilities or lobbies that may be closed to indicate that that it's done to protect customers under the current circumstances, that the bank remains open for business. And if Jeff, I don't know what you're doing about customers who need appointments to discuss a loan matter or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think something something in your posting on the door that addresses how customers
yeah.
can access a bank representative, I think would be good.
We're doing all that. And Bruce, I do think we're trying to kind of tag this as the bank is open for everything. We're just doing business a little differently. So, I mean, if that is a theme that we could all kind of adopt, even in our social media, whatnot, our comments to the press, I think it would help. Because American National Bank is open for full service business. We're just doing it a little differently.
And you're doing it differently to protect the safety of your customers
exactly.
as well as your employees. Right.
Exactly.
Exactly right. I know I saw one bank's post on Facebook yesterday that said, we will be serving our customers through our drive-through facilities and also by appointment. And I think that's exactly right. The messaging that we are open, we're fully operational, we're doing it a little differently is very important. Gary, to your question, I think there will probably be some geographic regional differences in how banks are doing that. So a little peer-to-peer conversation in different parts of Virginia might actually be helpful as well. Because I do think I hear from many of you that you're interested in as much consistency as possible.
Bruce,
I have a follow-up from Lloyd. Sorry, go ahead.
Bruce, this is Joe again. Just to add to that, I am I'm working on a statement on the health of banking in Virginia and the availability of funds and money. Don't know if and when that's going to go out, but it will be ready. It will be ready soon. And
Harrison,
I will do that. I will do that when I think it's appropriate to do that. And I hope that will certainly help. I think Bob, you had comments if we could.
That'd be very helpful. And Bob, also, if you could answer again the question about whether you believe a new flood certification is needed for a modification on a real estate secured loan. There was a request for that to be answered again.
I'm not sure I'm the one that has the answer to that at the moment, Bruce. If they could email it in and maybe we could bounce it around a little bit would be the best thing to do on that one. As far as the lobby closings and that type of thing, the FDIC is inquiring with me almost daily which banks are doing some of this. So I hate to impose on you all, but if each bank could just kind of email me maybe what your plan is, and I'll just keep the information for when I'm asked. I think most of you have my email. But I'll give it out again. It's robert.hughes@scc.virginia.gov.
Is there another question?
Yes, we've got a couple more questions, and I actually just acknowledged one of them. I'm going to try a different one.
Has there been any guidance on increasing FDIC insurance? And this is Randy Green with VCB.
Let me ask Jake to mention that or Joe.
We haven't heard anything, any discussion of that nature on any of the conference calls we've had with the FDIC.
We've had conference calls with FDIC at Atlanta, but they haven't mentioned anything coming out of Washington, and I'm assuming that would definitely be a Washington decision.
We've been watching all the regulatory guidance and haven't seen anything on that point, but I think it's a very good question.
Well, Randy, I know there have been some editorial suggestions that should be considered, but I'm not sure I've seen it move to the public policy side at this point.
For what it's worth, if you're passing this up the line, there have been a number of questions that we've gotten actually today.
That's helpful. Thank you.
That's helpful.
Yes.
Be big for these things.
Hi, this is Maria Tedesco, Atlantic Union Bank. Can you hear me?
Yes, Maria, go ahead.
I was trying to get through when Gary asked the question about best practices and what are folks are doing for communication. I just thought I would add my two cents since we are moving to our entire 150 branch network tomorrow to drive-through only lobby. By appointments, we're actually in good shape because there's just less than a handful of branches that do not have drive-thrus. But we are tailoring emails to our consumer customers. We have a different one for our commercial customers and for our wealth clients. We also have proactive outreach. So we have our RMs calling customers to inform them, particularly ones that are reliant on the branches. We've used our website and we'll be using our social media to communicate as well. And I just thought I would add those things. One of the things that, you know, we don't really see anything that we will not be able to handle, but we're going to take it day by day. We're also encouraging people to use digital options, not just for transactions, but we have the capability of opening accounts. So I just wanted to share that with all of you.
Very helpful, Maria. Thank you. Other questions? Monica, are there others in the queue?
No, Bruce, I don't see anybody else in my queue.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'll come back to you.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce. You know, hey, Joe, if I could just, you know, talking about sending things up. You know, I know the regulators, you know, don't know what to say yet about deferral of payments, you know, TDRs, all that kind of stuff. But I would stress to all the regulators that the velocity of those calls are off chart. We had a pipeline call this morning with all of our commercial bankers, and it is coming in rapidly. So the industry is going to need some guidance from the regulators about that topic as quickly as we can get it, I think.
And Jeff, let me to that, I meant to mention this earlier, but the folks at ABA have been in touch with the federal regulators every day this week, as you might imagine, and they are actively working on an FAQ that will be sort of a living document that should be out to all banks very soon, hopefully this week, that will address a lot of these questions and have the answers from the regulators.
Well, I'm going to wrap up with maybe three positive bullet points, but I got to start with a negative one. Forgive me. You know, I am a little concerned that this, Bruce, this is for the VBA and for the ABA messaging that, you know, clearly, as we all know, our industry is extremely well capitalized. Our asset quality is very strong, and we all are there to support our customers and our employees. My concern is if this is a prolonged, deep economic impact, that we will get pressure from our customers, the administration, to help our customers. And then if it really goes south, then we're stuck holding the bag, you know, capital, asset quality, and that instead of bailing out Main Street, they've got to flip some, you know, bail out the banks a little bit. So I just think we need to be mindful that as bankers, we are all in this together to support our customers, to support our employees. But just let's remember, no good deed goes unpunished. And I just want to be careful that we don't get back in the same boat we were in at the end of the last recession. So I'll let you take that and do with it as you please. Hey, Joe, I do think some positive is coming out of this, will come out of this. You know, all of us bellyached about creating pandemic plans. Boy, I'm glad we got it. Every one of us are using them, and I think the consensus would be they are working. All of us have the same priority, our employees, our customers. I am so proud and so impressed of our industry and how we are sharing information, working collaboratively to achieve those two goals. And with a little humor, I'm learning at American National, we've been meeting by conference call, video call, and I've been so impressed how nimble we have been and how quickly we are making difficult decisions. I'm not quite sure why it took so long in the past for us to do that. We'll revisit that when we get over this. And, you know, I do think we're going to see, as an industry, our behavior and our customers' behavior is going to be different. And it's going to be interesting to evaluate all of those changes after we come out of this. That being said, Bruce, look, I really appreciate everybody's time. Joe and Jay, thank you very much for your participation. I think it was very valuable. I think this call, Bruce, was very valuable. And once again, I thank you and your team for putting it together. And once again, as Bruce said, if the VBA can do anything for you, reach out to Bruce directly or any of his teammates. So, Bruce, with that, I'll let that conclude this call and hope everybody stays safe and healthy. Thanks.
Likewise, and let's just all stay in touch. Thank you.
I don't understand the flood wall.